You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. Embrace the odds.
I want winners.
Game Play, hour number three. Jim Taddy subbing for Matthew Cause. Overdrive, of course, at 4 at 5:30. Slovakia against Canada, World Junior action. Join us for that as we take you into the night. And, of course, you're listening on TSN 1050. And time now for my favorite game.
Yes, guy. No, guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, drivers and passengers, time now for the fully sanctioned and approval-given edition of Yes, Guy, No, Guy on Game Play. Go ahead, sir.
All righty. Well, it's clearly the topic of the day, so let's dive right into it. Connor Bedard will have at least one 50-goal season in the NHL.
Oh, an emphatic yes, guy. Fun to watch. And this is a budding, breaking story. Just watch him from night to night and see the difference. So last December when we did the first game, we only did two, and then COVID wiped out the tournament. He was a bit player on that team, played his way up the roster, and in game two, he got four goals. So, I mean, this is the kind of movement you see in the guy's game. He's had, he finished the whole season, and obviously is actually better than he was last December because he's more mature and has played all those games. So this is a fun story to watch. An emphatic, all capital letters, yes, guy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I tweeted out yesterday, the tankathon this coming year for Bedard, it's going to be wild. I could see, honestly, 7, maybe 10 teams by Christmas throwing in the towel. That's how good this guy is. He will change your franchise, I don't want to say overnight, but something really close to it. And I think it's going to be fascinating to watch how many teams just are shamelessly trying to race to the bottom to get this guy.
Yeah, good luck with the draft lottery. We'll see how that works. But clearly the Coyotes in Chicago have zeroed that in, and others will follow. I agree with you.
Let's go to the courts. Serena Williams, obviously she announced that she is stepping away from tennis, evolving, whatever you want to call it. So I ask you, does Serena Williams deserve to be considered the greatest tennis player of all time in both men's and women's competition?
I like that you said deserves as opposed to a definitive answer. She absolutely deserves to be considered the greatest tennis player of all time. Look at her body of work. Look at the championships. Look at what she's done to women's tennis. She's elevated it without question. You can get into the field wasn't as deep as on the men's side, but having said that, that's not her fault. So she absolutely deserves to be considered the greatest tennis player of all time.
I do too, and we played a pretty interesting clip from Mad Dog Chris Russo yesterday. He was saying that the Serena as the GOAT, the discussion is not as much of a slam dunk as some people want to make it out to be. He talked about how Martina Navratilova played in a much tougher era in the 80s, where we obviously have to consider Margaret Court as well. But when it all comes down to it at the end of the day, I'm going to go with Serena. She is perhaps the most physically intimidating and well-tuned athlete in tennis history, in my mind. Like, when you look at her versus her opponents, like, pretty much every time she stepped on the court, she had a physical and, in some ways, a mental advantage as well. So, for me, I'm totally open to there being a bit of a discussion regarding the topic, but in my mind, if you made me pick, I think it's pretty hard to go against Serena.
Yeah, I agree with you. The power of her game, and it makes you appreciate what Bianca did at the U.S. Open against her. I mean, Bianca matched her power. I know Serena probably wasn't in top condition in terms of being totally healthy, but that was marvelous to see. I think she elevated the game, so that's worthy definitely of some sort of praise right there.
Well, we've seen lots of flowers and accolades thrown at Serena this week. I'm currently staring at a TV, and they're discussing a person who is not getting very many flowers right now. We'll move on to that one. Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is not worth the headache that comes with him.
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. In the right situation, this guy's a game changer. He's a superb athlete. There's really nobody like him. This is where we get into, why does he get to do that? Well, he's in a position where he can ask for certain things to happen because he wants to win. Now, some people don't like that. I don't have much of a problem with it if you deliver. so I like a lot of what people call baggage about him. I don't really care about. It's I think he's a superb athlete and can make a difference. So I don't know that we consider them headaches. I think if you're going to acquire a guy like that, you're going to want to make it work for you as opposed to assigning him a spot and demanding that he find his way. So I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say, yes, guy, I don't like the wording of headaches, but I'm going to say he is worth whatever he brings to the table. So yes, guy, to that. So because you've sort of worded it with a negative, he isn't worth it. I don't know if yes, guy works there, but I'm all for him.
Yeah, I'm going to reluctantly say yes, guy. He's not. He is worth the headaches, so to speak. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's tough. It's really, at this point, I think all of us are worn down with this situation. I think we just want a resolution to it one way or the other. And I think part of the reason he's getting so much heat right now is because he's sort of had a track record of, you know, being somewhat of a difficult player to manage, even in other stops, like whether it's OKC, whether it was Golden State. It just feels like no matter where this guy goes, it is a me-first attitude, which I should point out, there's not necessarily anything wrong with a me-first attitude all the time. But it just feels like no matter where this guy goes, there's a new problem that pops up every single time. So, you know, despite the fact that that is true, he's so talented and he's such a game changer and he can make such an impact towards winning that I guess he is worth dealing with all the baggage that comes with him. But Jim, I got to tell you, it's a very reluctant answer from me. Like, if I was a teammate of this guy, if I worked in the organization with this guy, I would be pretty darn fed up with him at this point.
Well, okay, so let's spin it around. Let's say, I mean, the guy has is worth his salary. You know, he makes a lot of money. He's a great ball player, and he's on a timeline in terms of how long he gets to do this because he's had his injuries, and he's older. So at given his where he is in the game, why would he not? Why would he pass up the opportunity to not dictate terms, but ask for certain things to happen? I mean, that just makes sense that a guy would do that. I mean, what's the point if you got 2 or 3 years left to just suck it up, as they say, and play under somebody else's conditions? That's not going to work. You're not going to be able to deliver a championship. He's thinking about delivering a championship somewhere, and you can get caught up with the money he makes. That's irrelevant. That doesn't matter. That's a signed contract. Both sides signed to it. It's all allowable. It's all passed by a CBA. Forget about the money. If the guy has the ability to win a championship for you and you agree with what he's telling you, why wouldn't you get him? Do you not want to win the championship?
I do see where you're coming from, but I think one thing that frustrates me and other people who are watching this situation, Durant's now trying to force his way out after making pretty much every decision for the Nets over the last couple years. Like,
LeBron does that.
Right, but LeBron doesn't necessarily try to run away as quickly as Durant does. Like Durant's the one that wanted to get Irving. Durant's the one that wanted to fire Atkinson and bring in Nash. Durant has made any other number of personnel-related decisions, or at least, you know, like, try to influence the team to go in that direction. I just think there's a lot of people who are looking at it like, this is the mess that you made, in a sense, and now you don't want to sleep in that bed.
Well, you could say that. I think it's fairly harsh. The man's entitled to earn his money and play his game. I think that he's that great an athlete that he could win a title for somebody. So I have respect for that.
It is true. Like, don't get me wrong. I hope I haven't come across as underappreciating Kevin Durant's talents, because this guy is very much in the discussion for like a top 10, top 15 player all time. I think when you talk about the pure scorers in the history of basketball, I think you'd put him even higher on that list. Like, Durant could very easily be considered a top 3 or 4 pure scorer in the history of the game. It's just
I just think,
sorry, go ahead.
You know what? I sorry to interrupt. I just think people get upset with this situation because you're not supposed to be able to do that. But in most of our lives, you can't really pick and choose. I can remember Eric Lindros years ago addressing the media, and people were asking him why he didn't want to play in Quebec and wanted to play elsewhere. And I remember him saying, well, you guys all get to pick where you work. Well, that's not quite true. You get where the job offer takes you. And I think most of us, I would consider that, you know, we're all lucky to have our jobs, and we're happy about that, and no complaints that way. And these guys are not in our world. They're different. They're at the top of the list in terms of talent and money they can make, and it's not to be used for a comparable for the rest of us. They're just there, and so you can't sort of apply that the working class mentality to it, because he's a star athlete worth the money he gets. He can win you a championship. That's pretty well the end of the story for me.
No, I think you're right. I think there is a lot of validity to that. The parallels between regular life people and athletes, there's not that many, and it is important to focus on those distinctions, because that can make the world of a difference.
And there's an ownership that goes with athletes, which I get, because years ago on the same subject, I said, if you were going to the movie theater, which very few people do anymore, but if you're buying some music or going to watch a movie, do you care what the artist or actor makes? You don't. All you care about is if the song was good or if the movie was good, and whatever they make is their own, that's their own problem, whether they're overpaid or not. If you don't like the song, you don't listen to it. If you don't like the movie, you don't listen to it. But there's an ownership that goes on with professional athletes that is somewhat okay, but at some point it starts to bother me. They are entitled to a life. They didn't, you know, they don't pick the money that the revenue that the league makes. It's theirs, so they get their share of it.
I actually really like that analogy. You got to get a TM, a trademark, and a patent on that one too. I actually think that's a great analogy when we talk about how athletes make decisions. Really good stuff from you, Taddy.
Well, I think there's just an ownership that goes with all that. He's on my team. Oh, he stiffed my team. I don't like him. Or the other one is, he cost me a bet, so I don't like him anymore. Well, that's fine, but that's personal, man.
let's put a fork in that one for now. Let's jump over to the gridiron. Yeah. The Cleveland Browns should trade for Jimmy Garoppolo with Deshaun Watson's punishment still up in the air.
You know, I have to say that the whole Watson thing is just a complete mystery to me in terms of why the Browns are interested. You know, obviously innocent until proven guilty, but there's a lot of things wrong with this particular case. And, you know, the 6-game suspension can turn into a year suspension. And I know we've all got the details in the contract, and everybody has a right to make money and all that. I just don't know that I would want it associated with my brand. So I would concur. I would say yes, Guy, to what you just said.
Yeah, I think so too. I think by all accounts, it looks like the NFL is very much hell-bent on extending this suspension past 6 games. I think everyone, you, myself, others, the vast majority of people do believe that 6 games is too light given the magnitude and the seriousness of the allegations put against Deshaun Watson. You know, we have to put allegations in air quotes, but I'm not so sure people really believe his side of the story at all. I'm just saying the Browns, the rest of their team is quite good. If they add Jimmy Garoppolo, he's proven that he can take a team on a playoff run. He was in the Super Bowl pretty recently, and I don't think the cost is going to be too high. San Francisco has already decided they're going to move on to Trey Lance, so I'm thinking San Francisco will be happy to get pretty much anything they can from Garoppolo. Because otherwise he's going to be collecting dust on the bench, or they might even outright release him, at which point they get nothing. So I think the on-paper fit between the Browns and Garoppolo is about as strong as it could get.
Okay. Do we want to do another one?
Yeah.
One more yes guy, no guy?
Yeah, we got a Lions one coming up. We have to get to it. Dan Campbell will still be the head coach of the Lions when the 2023 season rolls around. So I think essentially what I'm asking here is, can you foresee the Lions season going so badly that they decide to can Campbell in his second year?
That was last year. No, I got to believe he's still around in a year's time. I think there's going to be some improvement. The question is how much. And as long as they have that. I mean, I'm just not a big fan of changing the coaching staff or the general manager on a regular basis. It causes disrepair to the franchise. You have to be very careful when you do that, and just because it'll force a lot of player decisions because there's different eyes on the situation. In some cases, it's needed, but it is hard on the franchise to keep doing it, and boy, the Lions have written the book on front office and coaching changes. So I'd like to see some stability there for at least a year or two and another year or two and see where this goes, because I think they're drafting right now, so that should lead them out of the woods a bit.
I agree. I think you used a very key word there, stability. Continuity is another one that I would use. I think that it really helps teams build their culture. It helps teams build their identity. And like you said, it can be really, really harmful for a franchise when somebody in power just decides, hey, we're moving on from this guy for whatever reason, whether it's on-field, off-field, personal, not personal. It's a decision that comes with a lot of weight when you make it. So I'm going to say yes, guy. I think Dan Campbell is going to do well enough this year to be brought back next year for the Lions.
Okay, one more?
Yeah, let's do it, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
The exodus of players going from the PGA Tour to the LIV Golf Circuit has done irreparable damage to the PGA Tour. So I'm essentially saying, will this cat ever be put back in the bag?
I'm going to say I disagree with irreparable. It's done damage to the PGA Tour, so I'm going to say no, guy. It has not done irreparable damage. The great thing about the PGA Tour are its sort of sub-tours that it has where you have to play your way into getting a card, so there's always a steady stream. Now the LIV Golf Circuit could attack that as well, but I believe that the PGA Tour learned a big lesson here, and whether they just keep upping the purses or, you know, this will force them to re-examine a lot of things, but I still think that the PGA Tour is a really good brand and people will want to spend their careers on it. So I'm not going to say irreparable, but it has done temporary damage. So that, because of the wording, I'm going to say no, guy.
I'm kind of going the other way. I kind of feel like at this point, it's like the toothpaste is out of the tube. There is no going back in. Like, even if, let's say hypothetically, LIV Golf suddenly folded, like they ran out of money or people were no longer interested, how are the players who left going to be welcomed back? Like, I just feel like with the names of the players that we're seeing going over, Cam Smith being the most recent one, how do you recover from that if you're the PGA? Like, I read a stat, or a number rather. The LIV Golf Tournament has given out almost as much money in contracts as the PGA makes in 1 year as a whole. Like, how do you compete with that, even if you're the PGA?
Well, you don't, but, you know, I guess what you're looking at is the long part of that. Like, how long does the LIV Golf Circuit keep doing that, and how does the PGA counter? It's a sort of a different scenario. You can't really, there's no comparable for this because the money supply for the LIV Golf Circuit is unprecedented. So it'll be interesting to see how this moves forward. If you're asking me, will the PGA Tour be the same as it was, I would have to say no. But, you know, they will come up with something. It's just... these are uncharted waters, is the best way to say it. By the way, tomorrow's Lotto Max jackpot is an estimated $10 million. Text MAX and your name to 71010 for your chance to win $100 in Lotto Max tickets with Encore. Standard message rates apply to all entries. Lotto Max, dream to the max. Sounds like a plan. This is Game Plan on Game Play on TSN 1050. New show. Gameplay, TSN 1050. Gameplay on TSN 1050 is brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. And we have Chris, producer Chris. We've got NFL preseason games tonight.
Yeah, what's your take on that? Do you ever find yourself watching any NFL preseason or is it more of a pass for you?
No, guy. This is a complete. I mean, wow, preseason football. That's tough. I mean, it's just really nothing to look at there. They can't show you anything, and you know, there's like 500 people on the roster. It's tough to figure out what the value of it is. I mean, you have to do the reps and all that, but boy,
well, you talk about doing the reps, but quite often, a lot of the star players don't even play. So I see where you're coming from. That really devalues the product in a sense. There's no better example than tonight. Mac Jones will not be playing for the Patriots. They're going to be facing the New York Giants. For me, I think these are two interesting teams when you look at their outlook for the rest of the season. What do you think about the Giants this year? I've heard quite a few people telling me that they think they're a bit of a sleeper team. They're a team that could overachieve relative to what people are expecting. But I got to tell you, I don't see it. I can't see it happening, to quote another very famous person on this radio station. To me, when I look at the Giants, I think that they could easily finish in the bottom three, maybe even last place. Like, they have some talented players on offense, but they have a new coach. And I think that is the reason why a lot of people are pretty high on the Giants right now. Brian Daboll had great success in Buffalo, and people are kind of assuming that it's going to translate over to the Giants. But, I mean, last time I checked, the Giants don't have Josh Allen.
Boy, the only question I would ask or to come out of that with the concerning the Giants is, could they be better than the Jets? I mean, these two teams suck. I mean, they're just brutal. I don't know how. I mean, they're just a shade better than they're a one win ahead, actually a half win because the Lions tied. They're almost in the same boat with the Lions. And I would actually be inspired by what the Lions are doing more than the Giants and the Jets. So this is a complete waste of time, the Giants, for me.
Yeah, I'm fading them pretty hard. I think I might hear from it from Aaron Korolnik if they do manage to do pretty well, because he seems to be backing them. Aaron certainly knows his stuff, but I can't level with him on this one. I really don't see it from the Giants. If you're looking for some betting lines for tonight, the Giants are -2.5 favorites. I think with New England resting most of their players and with the Giants starting quite a few of their regular players, I would probably look at the Giants -2.5 at -110. Speaking of Aaron Korolnik, I believe he also said that same thing this morning, so I will be jumping on his coattails in that regard.
Well, and I guess it makes sense. I can't buy in here, so I'm going to do a hard pass on preseason NFL stuff. But there's money to be made, so I'll back in whatever you said there. Okay, so coming up next, we're going to talk tennis. Gil Alexander will be by from VEASAN, and they're going to talk about tennis with Serena Williams, departing means, and a few other tidbits there as well. This is Gameplay on TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, and streaming on the iHeartRadio app. Oh, yeah, that's marching music. Final half hour of Gameplay for a Thursday. Reminder, Overdrive for 90 minutes at 4 o'clock, and then we'll have the World Junior Hockey Championship Slovakia against Canada live from Edmonton for you at 5:30. I was just looking at Gil Alexander from VEASAN will be by very shortly. I was looking at Serena Williams. Sometimes you don't go back to the stats. Grand Slams, 23, 7 Australian Opens, 3 French Opens, 7 Wimbledon titles and 6 U.S. Open titles. That is absolutely marvelous. Career titles, 73. Look at the career record, though. In singles play, 855 wins, 153 losses. That's a winning percentage of 84.8%. That is absolutely stunning. I mean, you know, where do you put her on the athletic list of all time? I always do it era by era. So certainly of her time, she was the best. I don't like to do different eras because one leads to the other, but her power game was unparalleled, and just a great performer. She'll be 41 after the U.S. Open this year, as in her terms, as she evolves out of tennis. Just a great career. And again, I'm really thankful for all these things that you get to cover and be around, certainly in this business, but even if I wasn't in the business, to be able to say that you saw the Serena Williams career from start to finish. It's just marvelous. What a great career. And, you know, when Venus first arrived in the scene, you know, you didn't realize how good her sister was or how good the pair of them are. I mean, it's just a fantastic story. So let's bring in Gil Alexander now. He's the host of A Numbers Game on VEASAN and also the highly rated, recognized Beating the Book podcast is what I'm trying to say. Gil, welcome. How are you today?
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
So just talking about Serena Williams while we were hooking up with you, you know, where do you, this body of work, this achievement, where do you put this? And can you put it anywhere except for on its own mantle?
It's at the top. I mean, first of all, from a, you know, beyond tennis perspective, she and her sister, it's one of the great American sports stories, if not the finest American sports story of our generation. On the tennis court, it's hard not to put her above, dare I say, all of the greats, Martina, Chrissy Everett, of course, Steffi Graf, 23 Grand Slam singles titles, one shy of the record, 14 doubles Grand Slam titles, two mixed doubles.
I think we lost him there. We'll try and reconnect. Obviously some technical issues. Gil Alexander from VSiN stopping by. And, you know, so that's the grand question when a career is over or it's starting to wane is, like, what do you do with it? Where do you put it? And I believe a lot of these things are one-offs. And you know, it's an unfortunate when you do a comparison list because then you're deleting some pretty good excellence. I firmly believe that, you know, the athletes that we have now that achieve greatness have many more platforms to sort of penetrate all our lives. And there's just much more they can do as opposed to just being the athlete. There's much more to these people, and you're able to see that. And that would have been true before, but you weren't able to see it because there was no platform or outlet for that. So that's why, you know, really anybody who's achieved anything in the last 30 years is much more noticeable than before, just because you just and they weren't under the same scrutiny as well before. So there's a lot of different angles here to consider. That doesn't mean that you have to ignore achievement from the past. But I don't like that comparison thing. I think she's a completely unique story and should be honored that way. And whether you want to call her the greatest of all time or not, it doesn't really diminish from what she's achieved. And we're going to miss her. There's no question about that. Gil is back with us. So let's just start over, Gil. I mean, again, like, where do you put her achievement? It's just so stunningly impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 23 Grand Slam singles titles, Jim. It's 14 doubles titles. It's two mixed doubles Grand Slam titles. I mean, that's 39. I think that, I mean, if you have to rank them some way, you have to base it on something that is objective and not subjective. That's 39. That's got to be, you know, it's over Martina. It's over Steffi. It's over Chrissy, which is just rarefied air. And then from beyond tennis, I mean, her and her sister, it's the greatest, certainly American sports story, I think, of our generation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think if you do a comparison and you went to the generation or the age group just before she started, you would see that the field may have been deeper. But all that tells you is that she, and you could add her sister into there, elevated the sport by herself, didn't she?
She really did. She could always rely on her serve, even when, you know, whether you were, you know, I bet a lot on tennis, whether you were betting or just enjoying it as a fan, no matter how down she appeared in a match, she could always will herself back. And, you know, here she is on the cusp of the U.S. Open. I don't think she has a chance at really contending, but what a story it would be if she could even last a week. That would be something to behold.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when somebody leaves, you know, as they say, one door opens and another closes, or maybe it's the other way around. But as she leaves the void, who could try to step in and fill this void?
Well, I think the obvious choice is Iga Świątek from Poland, who has won two Grand Slam titles already and has shown when she has her A game, she's just coming off a 37-match win streak. I mean, that's, you know, an unbelievable stretch of tennis, needless to say, but she's shown the ability to really be good on clay and hard courts. Grass, different story so far, but she's won multiple tournaments on both of those surfaces. And so I really think if there's anyone to fill that void, it's her, which, you know, sort of then maybe segues nicely to a Canadian young lady, but I think Świątek would be the primary choice to answer that.
And you're talking Bianca?
Well, here's the thing with Bianca. You know, 2019 U.S. Open, some of us bet on her then and saw the greatness in her. Bianca has just not been able to get back to that. Obviously, injuries have plagued her through the years. But we are seeing now this week, right? Like, I wager on tennis. I do things by raw data, by serve percentages, by return percentages. Her numbers over 6 months and 12 months, which are the parameters I use, are not really elite. But whenever you bet or dare bet against Bianca, there's always a little notion in your head where you say to yourself, well, but if she regains that greatness, she is one of the few best women's tennis players in the world. And she's only 22 years old, Jim. So it's really amazing to think about how long we've known her. It can only, I think she will regain that at some point.
Well, I mean, that's one of the great memories of all time, Bianca against Serena at the U.S. Open, and how Bianca really, you know, played, or I guess used Serena's game against her. She had the power. So those numbers that Bianca had for that win and maybe what they're tracking like this week, what are those numbers like?
Well, again, I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but essentially if you do a very quick addition, I'll do the sort of hack way of doing it. If you do a quick addition of return percentages and serve percentages, if you're over 100, you're kind of an average pro tennis player on, say, the ladies' side. If you get, let's say, on the men's side, if you get to 110, you're elite, you're Nadal, you're Djokovic. Right now, Andreescu is really hovering just above the 100 mark. That's not elite yet. But in the past, she has had those numbers. And like you said, the power is there. And I just, she is so gritty. You know, some of these matches here you can see this week, you're starting to get a glimpse of how her game is stepping up, how she's mentally into it. So I don't know if it's this week where it manifests, but she is absolutely someone to watch at the U.S. Open.
And numbers on Leyla Annie Fernandez, I'd be interested in that. What do you have there?
So she's a fascinating one too, and love Leyla Fernandez. You know, when she made her run to the U.S. Open finals and lost to Raducanu just had this really unbelievable, you know, moment in time where her numbers just soared. And as great as Leyla was, hers never got quite to the point that Raducanu's did, and that sort of manifested in the finals. But Leyla, I think, is one of these. Her numbers are just slightly better than those of, say, Andreescu right now. I would imagine both of their numbers will improve in the short term, if not the long term. Both of them will be around at the highest levels for a very long time.
Well, okay, so since we're tracking Canadians, what do you have for Shapovalov and Ogier Aliassime?
So here's the thing. I would hate to think that Denis Shapovalov peaked at Wimbledon in 2021 when he lost in three very competitive sets to Novak Djokovic. I don't think that's the case. He's only 23 years old. I think the best is yet to come, but the problem is that there was a window where he was definitely in the short conversation of, okay, when the big three, you know, get to retiring, whenever that day will be, that Shapovalov was on the short list. I don't know that we can say that anymore. Ogier Aliassime's numbers, his raw data is better. I think his buddy, Felix Ogier Aliassime, is showing that on the tennis courts right now. And you just really wonder. I mean, I think with Dennis, it's the coaching, right? I think he has to sort of commit. You know, he's slow to make the move, and I think that has sort of hampered his career. I think that changes moving forward, quite frankly. He right now, he's second to Ogier Aliassime. By the way, Milos Raonic, plagued by injuries, he was also an elite player. Canadian tennis is in a great place, both on the men's and ladies' side, but Shapovalov definitely has not reached the potential to date. There's so much more time left, but to date he has not reached the potential that most thought he would.
Okay, so the National Bank Open going on in Montreal and Toronto simultaneously. In terms of just maybe a betting tip or two, what do you have for that?
Well, so I bet these two matches last night. The betting number is not near where it was when I bet it, but I bet one on the men's side, one on the ladies' side. On the men's side, I bet Pablo Carreño Busta against Yannick Sinner. For those familiar with betting parlance, it was plus 185 when I bet it. It's about plus 158 now. That's about at the edge of where I would bet it. And essentially what that means is for every $100 you bet, you make 158. I got 185 last night, which was a better number. It's just teetering on the edge. And on the ladies' side, I hate to say it. I hope I don't make enemies, especially after what I just said about Bianca. But I had Qinwen Zhang last night at plus 164. She's all the way down to plus 114. What that means is that Bianca is still a favorite, but not nearly the favorite that she was when this market opened. So I'm way ahead of what the number is now. That doesn't necessarily translate into wins, by the way. We'll see. But those are my two plays, Pablo Carreño Busta and Qinwen Zhang.
And obviously, it's a couple of weeks away, but do you have any sort of thought about the U.S. Open as that gets near?
Yes. Well, first of all, I have a ticket on Iga Swiatek at 7-1, which I got the night that Ash Barty retired. That number is long gone. If I didn't have that number, if I didn't have that ticket and I was betting it right now, I really do think the sneaky value is on Coco Gauff, who you can still get at about 12-1. Always shop around for these numbers. These vary. I think Coco Gauff is really coming into her own right now. She is about as dangerous a player as there is out there. Very reliable. And Bianca, I think, at a good number, if you can get, I don't know what she is right now, 20-1, 25-1, I'm not sure, she's always a threat. So I think those are the two best on the ladies' side. Men's side is so difficult, Jim, because it's so ruled by the top players. But Nick Kyrgios in double digits, if he gets that serve going, I think that's the best bet on the board right now.
Wow. Jill, I really appreciate this. You taught me a lot here, that's for sure. And I have some VSiN copy to read on the way out, but thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's Gil Alexander, host of A Numbers Game on VSiN and also host of the highly recognized Beating the Book podcast. VSiN, the sports betting network, is the first 24/7 broadcast network dedicated exclusive to sports betting. Get VSiN's free daily sports betting email by signing up at VSiN.com/newsletter/newsletter/. And VSiN's special college football betting guide is out now, and the NFL betting guide will drop in a few weeks. These are available only to VSiN subscribers. More at VSiN.com, and VSiN.com subscribe is where you want to go. You'll figure it out. The web will take you there. I really thank him for stopping by, and that was very informative. Coming up next, the final segment, but on the way out, here's traffic. Wow, where did that go? 3 hours gone, lickety split. Gameplay, final segment, final minutes on a Thursday, and time now for the sound of the day.
Sound of the day, sound of the day. Here comes the sound of the day.
Oh, I have to say, you know, you got to listen to this one because you might not hear it again. So this is Chandler Redmond, plays in the Cardinals minor league system. And, well, just listen to it and we'll explain what happened later.
1-1 pitch, high drive, right field, he just did it! Chandler Redmond, 4 home runs in 4 straight innings, he just hit for the home run cycle for Springfield.
Call him up! Get him to the show!
A cycle from Kaepernick yesterday and a home run cycle tonight for Chandler Redmond. This is unbelievable!
Wow, this guy should go out and buy lottery tickets. So help me out with this, Chris. He hit for the cycle, the regular, what we call the cycle, the day before, and then the next day he comes up and in 4 straight at-bats, 4 consecutive innings, hits a solo, 2-run shot, 3-run shot, and a grand slam. Is that right?
Very close. I believe the player who hit the cycle the previous day was a different player, but he was on the same team. They were on the same team. His teammate hit for the cycle the day before. He hit for the home run cycle yesterday night. That's crazy. For anyone who can't figure that out, that's a solo home run, a 2-run, a 3-run, and a 4-run home run. I don't know if there's anything more impressive in all of sports, quite frankly. And I also have to add, I love the guy in the crowd who's like, bring this guy to the show now.
Well, that's phenomenal. I mean, I'd like to know how many people were actually had that opportunity to hit for that cycle. And I guess the flip side of that story is the pitching staff of the other team must have been brutal.
I actually do have that information handy. The closest MLB player to ever hitting the home run cycle is Scooter Jeanette from a few years ago. I believe he also had a brief cameo with the Blue Jays. He had a game where he had a grand slam, a solo home run, a 2-run home run, and I want to say another 2-run home run. So he was pretty much off by like 1 run, and he would have been the only player in MLB history to ever do that.
Wow, I mean, for this guy, Chandler Redmond, I mean, you'd never match that feeling again.
Nope.
4 consecutive at-bats, 4 straight innings, and it just got progressively better. Wow, that's stunning. Chris, thanks very much. Nice working with you. I got some liners I got to catch up on. Gameplay on TSN 1050 was brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. And traffic is up next. It's brought to you by CIBC. Switch to CIBC Smart Everyday Banking. Get up to $400 plus smart spending insights so you can make smart choices. Eligibility and other conditions apply. Visit CIBC.com/smart. Up next is Overdrive. Hope you enjoyed today's proceedings. And a reminder, 5:30 World Junior action right here.